WGNSTRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hello again, Irish fans. This is Dome and Domer. I'm Mike Sullivan along with Ed Sullivan. Today we're joined by a special guest, Sean Ford, National Team Director for USA Basketball. And we're going to talk about basketball. Mike Bray's team is out in Maui and doing very well through the first two rounds of the Maui Classic. So let's talk a little bit about last night's game as the Fighting Irish beat number 6 Texas in a really exciting, thrilling game that a lot of people felt was the caliber of an NCAA tournament game.
Oh, it was just a tremendous game to watch. Some tight moments there at the end as we had a little difficulty finishing out some free throw difficulties. But Sean, you've got tremendous perspective seeing a lot of different basketball players and basketball teams, not only all over the country, but all over the world in your work with the USA men's Olympic basketball team. And so you got a chance to watch the Irish a little in the second half last night. What are your thoughts?
I think they're good. They're very good. I think they're balanced. I think, you know, college basketball, the Big East, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, is about as good a conference as there's ever been, you know, in college basketball right now. Three of the Big East teams make up three of the top four teams in the country right now. Notre Dame is inching into that category as well. But I think that they have a lot of experience. You know, they have juniors and seniors, you know, and that really helps in college to win with juniors and seniors. They have good guard play. They have good shooting, and they also have great inside play. You know, so I think a balanced approach and a lot of experience, you know, you can do a lot in college. And it's great to see that they're playing, you know, NCAA tournament-type games in November.
It's good. I think you look back at a moment like this, you know, we're ranked eighth. We're looking good right now. And you look back at the approach that Mike Bray has taken to get to this point over the last couple of years. You know, you look at his recruiting philosophy. He brings in guys that fit his system and may not be the highest ranked guys out there, but they fit his system and what he likes to do. Guys that have a high basketball IQ, as he likes to call it. Guys that can shoot the three, good court awareness. They move well. They pass the ball well. And over the when these guys were freshmen, sophomores over the last couple of years, he scheduled in a way that built the program, got us back in the NCAA tournament, and got us back on the radar. And now I love the approach this year with a more veteran group to go out and have a really challenging non-conference schedule.
Yeah, the schedule is challenging both conference and non-conference. We were talking on the way over here, Sean, how good the Big East is this year. I suddenly look and get a little worried that, you know, we all are assuming we're playing for a seed, and now you start looking at some of the stretches we're going to have against the Big East, and I start being a little worried about the number of losses that we might have to face. Do you see any concern that suddenly Notre Dame might be a bubble team because of how good the Big East is?
You know, I think, you know, chances are, I mean, there's seven teams in the Big East that are ranked in the top 25, and Syracuse next week will be ranked. You know, they just beat Florida and they beat Kansas last night in overtime. So they'll be up there. And I think it's hard to think that, you know, they're all going to beat each other, and some of those eight won't all be there at the end of the day. So which teams can hang tough? And I think the key will be to win the games you should win. You know, you can't, no slippage. You know, that's the thing. You don't want to look back in December and even in a weaker team in the Big East, if you will, and slip up. You know, that's the thing, is no slippage. I mean, you know that, you know, anyone can win, you know, two teams in the top 10 playing, particularly, you know, the home team always has an advantage there. But you don't want to slip up against the teams and look back and say, boy, we should have had that one.
Right. And in the, that's what makes it tough in the Big East. As I hear you saying that, I'm thinking, well, yeah, you can't get beat by West Virginia and Cincinnati. Those are pretty good teams. Right? You can't get beat by Seton Hall and Providence. Right. And, you know, we know those are tough games.
You're going to, too. Yeah. And that, you know, DePaul's, you know, DePaul. They can sneak up on you. Right. And, you know, it's a lot of, there's such great coaching in the Big East,
right,
that teams, the way that the coaches coach in the Big East, they play their best basketball, you know, in February.
Right.
You know, and that's when you can really slip up, because those teams that, you know, had only won like four or five, six Big East games can sneak up on, especially, you know, the home courts and that kind of stuff. And, you know, the way the schedule went, if I looked correctly, like Notre Dame, they played Louisville twice, UConn twice. You know, and then a lot of the other. It's really tough.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, if I could stay on this Big East topic a little more and give us your thoughts about some other schools in the Big East, starting with, say, our undergraduate alma mater, Villanova.
Villanova. Yeah, no, I think Villanova's, I think they're going to be really good. They're very guard-oriented. They really manipulate the style of play, and they force people to play their style quite a bit. And I think that they do that because of their strength, their guard play, but also I think they're not as big up front as they would need to be to challenge in a half-court setting. So they like to control the tempo. I think if they have an Achilles, it would be matching up against, you know, the likes of Louisville and UConn and Notre Dame, you know, up front. They don't necessarily have the big guns, but they, you know, they can shoot themselves, you know, right into a game. And defensively, they're really disruptive. And if they can force people, you know, to play outside their style, they'll be okay. But they're kind of right in the middle of the pack. You know, I'd say, you know, 4 or 5. I don't think they quite get up to a top 10 team, just maybe because they're not as deep as they will be.
You know, I think you talked about disruption on defense and a lot of the Big East teams, their profile, things that have given Notre Dame trouble over the years are teams that really extend the defense and get out in your shorts a little bit and contest the threes. Yeah. And this is what was so encouraging about last night's game, because that's Texas's profile. And Notre Dame only turned the ball over last night, I think it was 6 times. It was a really, really good number against, you know, full court pressure the whole game. And you talk about strong guard play. If Notre Dame has an Achilles heel, what would you say it is? I think we all kind of have our own theories on that. But looking at Notre Dame, what would you say is their weakness?
You know, it's funny. I haven't seen him play. I don't see him play as regularly as you guys do. So, I don't know exactly. But maybe it's their mid. You know, they're up front. They're very good. You know, I think that, you know, the combination of Jackson, and the shooter McInerney, you know, in terms of, they both handle the ball quite a bit. McInerney maybe is a better ball handler, but he's a better shooter as well. And Jackson's just sturdy and steady. But, you know, he has a tendency to maybe try to do some things, you know, maybe penetrate a little bit deeper than you wish he would, and maybe try not to always make the simple play. And I think if getting those two guys down, you know, playing together, but also like the mid-range game. I mean, Luke Zeller he's very fundamental and he's a great passer. And what's great about him is that he can kick it out, particularly, you know, on the weak side. He did that a couple times for McInerney. He hit deep threes in the corner last night. But, you know the athletic wing type player, I know Ayers is there, but he's, you know, more of a shooter than a slasher. And I think a lot of Big East teams, you know, have that slashing position.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, and then I think defensively, the sort of the flip side of that is we have trouble matching up a little bit defensively, and you saw that a little bit. Texas got a lot of good looks when they wanted them.
Well, and that's the thing, like Louisville, you know, their athleticism is incredible. You know, Clark and William, you know, their athleticism is really their quickness. Where I think getting up and down the floor, I think Notre Dame. I mean, I haven't seen them play tons, but you know, I it's going to be long games for the big men going up and down the court in a fast-paced game.
Yeah.
I'm a little concerned about a trend that we've seen, which is we get some full-court pressure late in the game, and we've had some trouble. And last night watching that, I was reminded of some games last year when that happened to us too. And it's so odd because throughout most of the game, you talk about McInerney and Jackson handling the ball and sort of not having a problem with that full-court pressure. And then there comes a point where it seems like we get a little tight.
Yeah. Well, I don't, you know, maybe it's teams, the opponent in those situations, they get into this frenetic pace that you can't play the whole game like that. But in those short bursts, that's maybe where the athletic ability really comes home to roost in terms of just pure athleticism. But yeah, it was a little hairy down the stretch. But you know, the formula that worked last night is what we've seen the last couple of years: great ball movement, unselfish passing, and, you know, great shooting. And then Heron Goody, I think, is best when he gets his points off of other people creating. Jackson or McInerney in the lane or off the offensive glass. And when he tries to create his own shot too much, sometimes the offense stagnates a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think you can have guys just sitting out in the wing and just dropping it down to Heron Goody and expecting him to sort of make the move and go. He's got to get that out of movement.
Well, I think he's better at that when he gets into an offensive flow from those other ways of scoring through penetration or offensive, then, you know, I think he establishes himself a little bit, but sometimes I think he can force it a little too much, and we saw a little bit of that last night. Sean, let me ask you, you know, Mike Bray, we're big Mike Bray fans here, and he's getting some national recognition with Coach of the Year in the Big East the last couple of years. You know, do you have any thoughts on what the Big East is loaded with great coaches? Where does Bray fit into the overall, the hierarchy of coaches in the Big East, in your opinion?
You know, I think he's right there with some of the top coaches. I think everyone has the Big East always has great personality of coaches, you know, and they have, you know, you have guys like, you have Hall of Fame coaches, you know, Jim Boeheim and Jim Calhoun. Boeheim's been there since the first day of the Big East. Calhoun's been there almost as long, but they're both in the Hall of Fame, and you know, they're legends.
Yeah, and then there's this guy named Patino. He's done some things.
Rick'll be in the Hall of Fame, and he's, you know, a personality. I think that, and there's a lot of coaches that are, you know, making a name for themselves in the Big East as well. I think Mike Bray's now been there 8 years, but it's his second stop, you know, and he's progressed, you know, very well in his career. I think his approach is, being able to work with Coach K this summer and knowing that, you know, he's kind of a Coach K disciple, if you will. You know, it's being organized and it's being cerebral. And, you know, I think that the players take on the personality of their coach. You know, they play smart. They stay within themselves. They're always prepared. They're, you know, good conditioned, you know, making the right play. And you know, you're not going to win with one player in their system. You're going to win with five. And I think that's, you know, that's the way he's always coached. And I think the nice thing is that I always think that it's important that coaches understand who they are and they recruit players that reflect who they are, you know. And I think that he's done a great job doing that.
He has, and we've got another good group of kids coming in next year, a class of four that fit that profile.
Yeah.
And working on a real good kid out of Albany, that the point guard that they're working on, who's a junior now, who's really that next Torrey Jackson profile. Things are definitely, you know, arrows pointing up for the Fighting Irish basketball program. Want to congratulate USA basketball, obviously, on the Olympic gold medal. That was terrific.
Yeah,
what's in store for USA basketball? What should we be looking for over the next cycle?
You know, we're going to try to the best we can to have the same success. You know, it's always, you know, for the senior teams, it's world championship and Olympics. And, you know, we won the Olympics, you know, first major competition that, you know, our senior team has won in 8 years. This past August, and you know, we had to do some things differently to get it done, and it's a credit maybe to, you know, the level of basketball and the way it's playing at a different level
around the world,
yeah. You know, globally. And so it was really fun and exciting, and I think we all kind of take a great sense of satisfaction in the accomplishment, but know that, you know, it's harder to stay on top of the hill than it is to get there sometimes. So, you know, we kind of have our work cut out for us trying to do the same, you know, commitment from some of the elite NBA players for multiple years and that kind of stuff. So, you know, we look towards London, to be honest with you, 2012, and the World Championship in Turkey in 2010. So that's kind of what we're looking at.
Some obviously great experiences you've had over the years going to the different Olympics and all that. Just looking back on China, what stands out in your mind, sort of an enduring memory for you personally in those trips? What kind of things stand out most for you?
You know, I think it was just the way everyone kind of came together, the commitment of the players, the coaches. They're committed to it. They love it. It's the way for them to compete at a really high level. Players, it's just an incredible time commitment, and for the players over the course of 3 years to take an ownership in representing their country and ownership in, you know, trying to regain the Olympic glory, if you will. And, you know, a lot of times, anyone who plays for USA basketball, we're always their second team, whether it's a coach or a player, because there's another team that, you know, really takes a higher priority than us. But we were able to raise the level of ownership that players and coaches had in the national team program, and it ended up being their team. And rather than just the team that they were participating in for a month or so. And that transformation was really exciting. And once the players laid it all out and gave it their all, it was really something, you know, what they could do both on the court and off the court, because I think that the players were ambassadors for the game and for, you know, being Olympians over in China, which was really exciting because no one said, all right, you know, when you get there, you need to do this, this, and this. You need to go see the other athletes. You need to go to other events. You need to say all the right things. You know, that was just over the course of 3 years, the culture had changed such that they felt an obligation to do that as opposed to, you know, a recommendation that it would be a good thing to do.
That's terrific. Yeah, I mean, the performance on the court, it sure looked like they were playing as a team and not as individuals.
Well, you know, I think, you know, anyone who's been involved in something that's maybe as public as what we did and people following it, you know, you always wonder behind the scenes if it what it's really like to put something like that that looks so much fun from the outside. And to be honest with you, it was that much fun and that easy on the inside when we were in China. You know, all the logistics and all the getting along and moving people around and all that kind of stuff, it was as fun on the inside as it looked from the outside.
Who were the key personalities that you think helped pull that together and create that in a way that, that frankly hadn't been pulled together in the previous team?
Well, you know, it goes in steps, and, you know, for the first time, we went away from like a committee, if you will, and had someone in charge, and that helps a lot. Jerry Colangelo was in charge, and he selected the coach and he selected the players, and then he let them do their jobs. And so, you know, Coach K, you know, was he was instrumental in it. You know, he was the leader of the team for a good portion of, you know, the preparation and the 3 years, and, you know, letting the players, you know, kind of setting the tone, but also understanding that he needed to coach this team different than he coached his Duke team. Mm-hmm. You know, these were professional players, and although he had the same instruction for them, his way of instructing them was different. You know, you can't, you know, stop practice and talk for 20 minutes. You know, and some of that is only because these guys are older. I mean, you slow them down and they start, you know, getting cold. They got to start stretching again.
Well, I can
and start
relate
up
to
again.
That, that's for sure.
You know, so, but, you know, I think his approach was different. And one of the things that was unique about, you know, Coach K that I realized is that he does most of his coaching off the court. You know, he does it in terms of getting on the same page with the players, gaining a trust with them, you know, making the first step towards them and not forcing them to come to him. You know, he said from day one, it's going to be easier for one person to change to 12 than 12 to change to 1. And, you know, so he understood, he always knew who he was coaching. And then once we got there, you know, the players really took it upon themselves. And having, you know, LeBron James was a key, and Jason Kidd was a key. Jason was just kind of the elder statesman. Everyone respected him. But, you know, when you go out and you put on the floor Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, and Carmelo Anthony, you know, those guys, it's really – Jason was – what was unique about Jason is that those three guys didn't necessarily want to be led by each other, but they would be – they'd all be okay being led by Jason as you move along. You know, it's – because they're so equal in their abilities that Jason was kind of like the maestro that let them just kind of do their thing. And LeBron really, you know, stepped up. He'd experienced 2004 – and, you know, was really, you know, Carmelo was as well, but, you know, LeBron just really stepped up and kept everyone together off the court, you know, and they would do things together. And you know, he was very vocal. He talks all the time. I mean, if you're ever to practice and you know, you'll hear coaches say, hey, communication is the most important thing on the court. And, you know, there's nothing that's more important. And he's one of the best communicators going. And that, you know, really helped a lot. Kobe is just, he plays at a different level. His approach to the game is incredible. The concentration, his concentration is and his competitiveness is, you know, kind of off the charts. You know, he conditions his body. He works out every day, practice or game, you know, whether it's Pilates or lifting weights or, you know, his body he really takes care of. And he's just ready. He lives for those moments to be in the gold medal game. That's what he lives for. And so it's fun to watch that.
Good stuff. Thanks, Sean, for being with us today and sharing those stories and those memories and your perspective on college basketball and the Fighting Irish. We're out of time for today. We'll be back after the USC game, or as news around the program warrants it. Notice that we didn't spend any time talking about the SC Southern Cal or SC ND game this weekend, probably for good reason. 30-point underdogs. I don't even know where to begin. So we'll leave it alone. And until then, you've been listening to Dome and Domer. For Ed Sullivan and Sean Ford, I'm Mike Sullivan. We'll see you next time.